This is an ABC podcast.
Hello and welcome to The World Today. I'm Sally Sara. This Wednesday, joy as 4-year-old Cleo Smith is found 18 days after she went missing from a campsite in WA.
We're so pleased that they have finally got, you know, their child back in their arms, and it just makes our hearts really full for them. We're so happy, and it's the best news that this community has ever received.
And leaving on a jet plane, Prime Minister Scott Morrison on his way home after a controversial trip to the G20 in Rome and COP26 in Glasgow. Well, there's been praise and immense relief in Western Australia this morning with missing 4-year-old Cleo Smith back in the arms of her family after a dramatic police rescue overnight. 18 days after the little girl vanished from her tent during a camping trip, she's been found alone inside a locked house just a few minutes' drive from the family home in Carnarvon. Police had to smash down the door to get her out and now have a 36-year-old man not connected to the family in custody. The breakthrough was announced early this morning by Deputy Police Commissioner Cole Blanche.
Cleo is alive and well. A police team broke their way into a locked house in Carnarvon at about 1 a.m. They found little Cleo in one of those rooms. One of the officers picked her up into his arms and asked her, "What's your name?" She said, "My name is Cleo."
Our reporter David Lipson joins me now with the latest. David, in a year where people have been desperate for good news, this is quite a remarkable story. What can you tell us about the extraordinary turn of events?
Well, Sally, of course, it comes after 18 days of unimaginable fear and anguish for Cleo's family. They, as you mentioned, woke to find that she'd vanished from their tent during the night at a campsite about 80 kilometres north of Carnarvon. And police investigators have thrown everything at this case ever since then, more than 100 officers working day and night to try to crack the case. And one or several clues led them to this house back in Carnarvon in the dead of night last night. And at 12:46, they smashed down the door of this locked house, found a little girl inside, alone but alive. And police were actually wearing body cameras at the time. The footage hasn't been released. But veteran cop Chris Dawson, the WA Commissioner of Police, who has led this investigation, has seen that footage and says it brought him to tears. Here he is speaking to the media.
Four police executed a search warrant in the early hours of this morning. They had to break in. It was a locked house. I've actually seen the vision. I can't release it, but it's a wonderful moment where they found young Cleo in one of the rooms, asked her a name, "What's your name?" And she said, "My name's Cleo." You know, I've got to say, it brought a tear to the eye.
That's the WA Police Commissioner there, Chris Dawson. And David, what do we know about the man who's in custody?
Look, not a whole lot. We know that he's 36 years old, but the crucial bit of information here is that he has no connection to the family, which must send something of a shudder through the community that he's not connected at all with the family. Police had been working, of course, on the assumption that this was an abduction case. The sleeping bag was missing from the tent, and the zipper of the tent was left up above the level that little Cleo would have been able to reach. Beyond that, though, we just weren't told a whole lot. We know that police officers used drones, aircraft, satellite technology to look at disturbances in the sand. Mobile phone towers were trawled for pings, and rubbish was collected from dozens of roadside bins. Police have actually described it a bit like finding a needle in a haystack of data, but all of this, of course, will come out through the ongoing investigation, and that 36-year-old man is still being interviewed right now.
And David, little Cleo is now back with her family. What do we know about her condition?
The main thing is that she's physically well. We don't know much about her emotional state. Clearly she's been through a significant ordeal, but the Deputy Commissioner, Cole Blanche, was speaking to 6PR in Perth and elaborated a little.
You know, physically she appears to be in good health, but obviously the medical professionals are with her at the moment, and I would be wrong for me to say any more than that, because I'm not one, but certainly she's getting the best of care right now. I think the most important thing is that Cleo's been found. She's with her family, and I know the community, just the outpouring of thanks and congratulations and relief has been extraordinary this morning.
And David, there's been an outpouring of thanks and relief. Give us a sense of what's been said.
Well, Cleo's mother, Ellie, actually posted a message on Instagram, a photo, an old photo of Cleo, and a message that said, "Our family is whole again," and a love heart, which has had hundreds and hundreds of responses, as you could imagine. Talkback Radio has been ringing hot throughout WA and indeed all over Australia. There's also been messages of support and thanks from the Prime Minister, who's returning from Glasgow. He said in a tweet, "What wonderful, relieving news, our prayers answered." And the opposition leader, Anthony Albanese, also thanked all of those who tirelessly searched for Cleo. The WA Premier, Mark McGowan, heaped praise on police for their work. He even seemed a little emotional himself as he spoke of what the family has been through.
"They've been through a lot over the last 18 days. Terrible trauma, some vicious attacks, and some no doubt very, very trying and sad times. So to them, I know all of our thoughts go to them. And we're so pleased that little Cleo has been taken back to them. So it's just an exciting, uplifting, wonderful day. And I'm sure we're very proud."
That's the WA Premier Mark McGowan there, and before him our reporter David Lipson. Well, for locals in Carnarvon who've searched tirelessly and never given up hope, it's been a whirlwind morning as they have come to terms with this good news. They're elated to hear that Cleo is safe. Our reporter Sarah Sedgi has been speaking to some members of the local community.
Carnarvon Shire President Eddie Smith took a phone call in the early hours of this morning. It was news his community, if not the entire country, had been anxiously hoping for. Cleo was safe.
"Elated. Absolutely elated. I'm a little bit speechless at the moment. I'm just trying to catch up, get my head around the fact that she has been found. It's just absolutely... I think the whole community should have a day off and just... Because I don't think people, you know, it'll take a bit to absorb, you know, everybody's been so worried."
Like everyone connected to this heart-wrenching case, Eddie is thankful for a lot of things, especially the police who never gave up hope of finding Cleo.
"Oh, I'm still trying to absorb it. It's absolutely fantastic. It's wonderful. Cleo's been found. And I just, once again, to our police, what a wonderful job. Wonderful."
"I don't know. I just feel so happy. I'm nearly in tears, seriously."
That happiness is shared across Carnarvon, a small, tight-knit town of around 5,000 people. Kim Nguyen runs a local bakery.
"We all just pray for her to be safe. That's all we need. And then to, you know, to found alive. That's the only thing we hope for. And this is like... oh, our dreamer comes through. Like, I think the whole community will be so happy with this. Ali went through a lot of hell, what's been through with her. And the community, every single person in town, like, they try to help. And we are here, like, every day just pray for her to be safe. That's what we want."
But the elation is mixed with a lot of uncertainty about the nature of Cleo Smith's disappearance. Lauren Norman and her partner own a signwriting business. They helped with the search, printing and distributing flyers.
"We just feel so humbled for the family. Like, we're so pleased that they have finally got, you know, their child back in their arms. And it just makes our hearts really full for them. We're so happy, and it's the best news that this community has ever received. It's been so hard, just to think... I have kids of my own, so just to think, like, it could have happened to me. Like, we all go up there and we all camp there and we all never think twice about, you know, locking a tent or looking at who's around us, because we all just know the area and we know it's safe. It's just really shocked everyone to think that this could happen here."
Laura Norman describes her community as resilient.
"And to know that they were living only a few streets away from actually where our house is makes you really uneasy about what is going on around your area. Yeah, really uneasy. But we're super glad she's found, and we really believe that we are still safe here. And, you know, kids will grow up here, and we think that this is still a safe place for them to grow up. We already have showed resilience in the community coming together for Ellie and Jake. Everyone will stand behind them now and be there for them with whatever they need, like we have before. But we all still feel, like, really helpless. We just want to do anything that will make their life easier for them and make Cleo happy.
Dave Aman, a local helicopter pilot, has been helping with the search from the air.
Yeah, we definitely told what's called, obviously, all the staff, and almost shed a tear because it was just overwhelming. It was great news. I couldn't be any happier, really.
And as one local told the program when she learnt of the news, Carnarvon is whole again.
That's Sarah Sedgie reporting there. Well, Dr. Terry Goldsworthy is a criminologist from Bond University and a former detective inspector. He's told Rachel Mealy that the $1 million reward offered as part of the Cleo Smith investigation would have been a critical part of the puzzle. He says finding Cleo alive was growing increasingly unlikely as the days wore on.
Look, yes, I think it is a surprise. I mean, the longer the time goes on in these matters, the less hopeful you become. You know, and I guess if it's not these type of matters, the child isn't found within 2 or 3 days, you're starting to suspect the worst has occurred. So, I mean, it started out as a missing person matter and then moved into, I guess you would say, a abduction, potential homicide investigation. So the fact that 19 days down the track they've successfully located the child, I think, is a great outcome.
Police have broken into a house at 1 o'clock in the morning. Does it look to you that they've acted on a tip-off that maybe came in late at night?
Yeah, look, I suspect that would be the case. I mean, police generally don't do, you know, entries at 1 o'clock in the morning if they can avoid it. Usually things they do during the early morning is in, you know, 5 or 6 o'clock onwards. So the fact that they've gone to their house at 1 o'clock would suggest to me that they've had some kind of information that they've deemed is appropriate to act on. And in these matters, you know, you have the competing demands of evidence gathering and the safety of the person. So if they've received information at a potential location of the child, the safety of the child takes paramount precedence. So they would have had to act immediately. It's not a case that you can go, oh, we think the child's at Smith Street, we'll just wait for a day or two and get some more evidence. You've got to go immediately.
What role do you think a reward plays in an investigation like this?
Well, I think the reward would have been crucial in terms of generating information. I mean, these investigations are really a hunt for information. So police are moving from a low information state to a high information state. And one way you do that is through the generation of public interest. I mean, the public are one of the greatest assets police have in these investigations. So the fact the reward is rolled out within 3 days or thereabouts was very surprising. I mean, my experience of rewards is that they usually only come out after you've exhausted traditional investigative techniques, so usually in cold case matters. And the fact it came out so quickly and was such a large reward, and that it was $1 million, was certainly surprising. And I think that just would have added a lot of pressure to whoever the offender or offenders were.
What process will the police go through now as part of their investigation?
So the police will now be building a brief of evidence and going back and trying to fill in the movements of Cleo and what happened to her over the last 19 days. And they'll do that through, you know, physical evidence, through attempting to interview the person they now have in custody and any other persons of interest. So there may be other people involved. We don't know that yet. So I think these things will be unfolding over the next hours and then over the next couple of days we'll see very intense police activity in terms of building a brief of evidence to bring people to justice.
That's criminologist and former police detective inspector Dr. Terry Goldsworthy. He was speaking to Rachel Mealy. On ABC Radio, right across the country, you are listening to The World Today. Prime Minister Scott Morrison is returning to Australia after the dual summits of the G20 in Rome and COP26 in Glasgow. Mr. Morrison was armed with his freshly printed plan to get Australia to net zero carbon emissions by 2050. But it was overshadowed by the bust-up with the French president. From Canberra, our political reporter Matthew Doran.
On issues of climate, Scott Morrison's message for Australia's closest neighbours is clear.
We're here because we're family, particularly amongst our Pacific family, and all of us are here because we want to achieve those outcomes.
And his rhetoric is in line with that of other leaders, such as Boris Johnson.
This is something that is an existential threat as we sit here in Glasgow today.
But Mr. Morrison's delivery on climate action is subject to intense criticism and scrutiny. He's left the COP26 climate summit as one of the few leaders of developed nations not to have a short-term 2030 emissions reduction target of at least 50%. That may have received more attention at Glasgow had it not been for the extraordinary spat which followed him from Rome.
I don't think I know. The French president's blunt response when asked if Scott Morrison lied to him.
The Prime Minister denies he lied to President Emmanuel Macron about the future of the $90 billion submarine deal between Australia and French shipbuilder Naval Group, spectacularly torn up in September. In mounting his defence, someone close to Mr Morrison leaked a text message from President Macron in the days prior to the announcement. Mr Macron asking whether the Prime Minister's unsuccessful attempts to get him on the phone were to deliver good or bad news about the contract. Officials from the Elysee Palace have expressed their disgust at the escalation, telling French newspaper Le Parisien,
"Trust is totally shattered. Disclosing a text message exchange between heads of state or government is a pretty crude and unconventional tactic."
The exquisite timing of the spray from President Macron when he called Mr Morrison a liar happened just minutes before Mr Morrison spoke in Rome, and it's followed by another case of remarkable scheduling today, with the French ambassador to Australia, Jean-Pierre Thibault, due to address the National Press Club in Canberra.
It is just shameful, and Morrison should apologise.
Former Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull is at the COP26 summit in Glasgow and signed the submarine deal in 2016. He counts the French president as a friend.
Well, it's quite clear that Emmanuel Macron is justified in complaining about Morrison's conduct. Scott Morrison elaborately deceived the French. And he doesn't pretend that he didn't. You know, he said we didn't tell them, he wasn't open with them. He's been criticised by the US president.
I thought Malcolm Turnbull went halfway around the world to save the planet, but apparently he's gone just to grind more axes.
Nationals backbencher Matt Canavan served in both the Turnbull and Morrison cabinets and continued this week's theme of frank character assessments on Channel 9.
I had a really productive relationship with Malcolm as Prime Minister, but since all that has happened, he's just become a bit of a tosser, hasn't he?
Another former colleague, Matthias Cormann, is now the Director General of the Organisation for Economic Cooperation and Development, the OECD. He's rejected Mr Turnbull's claim that Scott Morrison has a reputation as a liar.
I had a very good working relationship, you know, with Scott Morrison as Prime Minister. I had a good working relationship with Malcolm Turnbull and Tony Abbott as Prime Minister.
As Mr Morrison wings his way back to Australia, he's avoided the focus of his trip being on matters of climate. But the stoush with President Macron has opened him up to questions about his credibility, and the timing of the spat while he was treading the world stage has given that issue a global audience. The opposition leader is Anthony Albanese.
One of the things about Scott Morrison is that those people who know him best, who've worked with him the closest, can attest to the flaws in his character.
With an election looming, you can already hear Mr Morrison's political opponents sharpening their attacks.
That's our political reporter, Matthew Doran. Well, let's get some analysis now. What has the trip to the G20 and COP26 done for Scott Morrison's reputation and Australia's reputation overseas? Laura Tingle is Chief Political Correspondent for 7:30.
Well, I think, Sally, it hasn't done much for his reputation at home or on the world stage. In fact, it's hard to think of a Prime Minister who's gone overseas and come off the worse for it in quite the way Scott Morrison has this time. Normally, of course, Prime Ministers go overseas expecting to be enhanced in their domestic reputation by being seen to hobnob with world leaders. That really hasn't happened for the Prime Minister domestically. And of course, he's been put in a terrible position, or put himself in a terrible position, with at least two world leaders being President Macron and the US President Joe Biden. In terms of Australia's reputation, obviously our news is dominated by the submarine deal, but the main sort of focus of this trip was really about the climate change conference in Glasgow. And while we've been looking at it purely through an Australian prism, which is, you know, would we have a credible position to take to Glasgow, which I think we basically didn't, the pragmatic reality of these conferences is they never quite get as far as they hoped they will, and this one is no exception. You know, we didn't even put our statement on our intents didn't change from the one we made in Paris in 2015, whereas everybody else has basically doubled their commitments to reduce emissions.
On the submarines issue, the leaking of the personal texts from the French President Emmanuel Macron, can you give us some context there, Laura? How much of a line does that cross in releasing those texts?
Well, I think it crosses a really big line if you think about the trust that world leaders have in each other. People in Australia, you know, in diplomatic circles and in France have both been astonished by the fact that these text messages were leaked clearly by somebody in the Prime Minister's office, unless somebody else is looking at the Prime Minister's text messages. There's been outrage from the Elysee Palace about it. If you're a world leader and you're in a text message contact with Scott Morrison, are you going to be quite so candid in the future? I suspect you may well not be.
Why do you think he did it?
Look, he was obviously stung by the fact that the President had called him a liar. I think the ramifications, both domestically and internationally, of that happening are still sort of sinking in. I mean, this is a huge thing for one country's leader to call another country's leader a liar. So he was obviously stung, and he felt that he had to rebut that. So the double whammy of this really just does make it look like Scott Morrison, as the phrase has been regularly used in the last 48 hours, is prepared to throw anybody under the bus, including the French president and the American president. Now, this is something he's often been accused of doing in the Australian domestic political context. And the fact that he's sort of now seen to be doing it on the world stage, I think, really does create a very big problem for him, both here and overseas.
That's Laura Tingle, the chief political correspondent for 7:30. Finally today, in the United States, millions of children as young as 5 will start to receive COVID-19 vaccinations within days. Federal regulators have provided the final green light for kids under the age of 12. The rollout will be closely watched in Australia, where authorities are set to consider a similar move. Jade McMillan reports from Washington.
Good afternoon, Suburban Pediatrics. This is Tatiana. How can I help you?
At the Suburban Pediatrician's Office in Washington, D.C., Dr. Jessica Long has spent weeks fielding questions from parents wanting to know when their kids can be vaccinated.
I know the families in our community are excited, and as pediatricians, we're really excited. Kids get COVID, and being able to protect that age group from the infection, from serious illness, is outstanding.
Just days after the US Food and Drug Administration authorised the emergency use of the Pfizer vaccine for children between the ages of 5 and 11, the final hurdle has been cleared. A panel advising the Centers for Disease Control voted unanimously in favour of the move.
We have a total of 14 yeses, 0 no's, and so the motion passes.
Not long afterwards, the CDC's director endorsed that recommendation, meaning 28 million children across the United States could start to receive their shots within days. Doctors like Jessica Long will be sent smaller doses of the vaccine in special orange-capped vials.
It's the same vaccine, but it will be packaged differently. It's a smaller amount, smaller needle, and the plan is to have it available more easily at physicians' offices. For the adults, they were focusing more on the large vaccine sites. But for the children, we're really hoping to prioritize giving it to doctors' offices. So kids and parents can come to places that they're comfortable going to with people that they know.
One of those parents is Sandy Choi, a musician and mother of 2 children aged 6 and 9.
We have family members we haven't seen since before the pandemic, and we know that if the kids can at least get that first vaccine shot, then there's a really good chance that we'll be able to get together for the holidays.
While some parents are nervous about potential side effects, such as a rare heart condition linked to the vaccine, Sandy Choi believes the benefits to her kids and the broader community outweigh the risks.
I feel like our schools have gone out of their way to really try and provide for our kids and give them some stability and a safe environment. So I feel like once the kids are able to get vaccinated, that's going to make us feel so much better about the safety of our teachers and our administrators and our staff in the schools.
Even if 6-year-old Astrid has some reservations about the needle.
I'm happy and I'm kind of scared to get. I don't like the feeling of how it feels.
Nearly 2 million children in the 5 to 11-year-old age range have already been diagnosed with COVID-19 in the US. Around 100 of them have died. And with vaccine rates across the rest of the population lagging behind many other countries, Dr. Jessica Long hopes the next phase of the rollout will move quickly.
With every person that's vaccinated, we are getting closer and closer to getting this under control. And the more people vaccinated, the less chance of people getting sick, the less chance of this virus mutating to something more powerful, like we've seen with the Delta variant and other situations. So I don't know if it's going to be the last piece of the puzzle, but it's certainly a really important step.
That's paediatrician Jessica Long ending that report from Jade McMillan in Washington. That's all from the World Today team for this Wednesday. We'll be back again same time tomorrow. I'm Sally Sara. Take care.
Hi, I'm Ange Lavoie-Pierre.
And I'm Stephen Smiley, and we're from the ABC's daily news podcast, The Signal. There's a lot of pressure in Glasgow on wealthy countries to be more ambitious about cutting their emissions. And when the focus turns to this country, the Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, has a standard reply. Australia's record shows that we always keep our promises. What he doesn't talk about is how.
Today on The Signal, Australia's true record on climate targets. How much of it is actually smoke and mirrors? Look for The Signal on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.